This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. This morning, people were lining up at the Library of Congress for a chance to examine the long-awaited files of the late Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg is the only broadcast journalist who has had advance access to the papers. In this installment of her series, she looks at the phenomenon of judges flipping their votes.
In the common view of the Supreme Court, justices hear arguments in a case, take a vote, assign someone to write the opinion, and that's it. In reality, though, justices often change their minds. Even as they're writing an opinion one way, they are sometimes persuaded they are wrong. The most important vote flip, revealed for the first time in the Blackmun papers, occurred in 1992, when Blackmun's notes record that Justice Anthony Kennedy was a fifth and decisive vote to all but overrule the High Court's Roe v. Wade abortion decision. The Blackmun files show that Chief Justice William Rehnquist circulated a draft majority opinion that would have left Roe a meaningless shell. But by then, Justice Kennedy had changed his mind, and instead he joined four other justices to reaffirm Roe's core holding that women have a constitutional right to terminate their pregnancies. The same year, Kennedy's vote also switched in a case testing whether prayers led by a clergyman at a public school graduation violate the Constitution's bar to state establishment of religion. Initially, Kennedy voted to uphold the graduation prayers, but after completing a draft opinion, he wrote that it, quote, looked all wrong, and he rewrote it instead to invalidate graduation prayers. The Blackmun files indicate that every year there are vote flips like this. In 1986, for example, Justice Lewis Powell initially provided the fifth vote to invalidate state laws that made private consenting homosexual conduct a crime. Within days, though, Powell changed his mind, and in a vote he later said he regretted, he elected to uphold state anti-sodomy laws. Justice Byron White wrote the 5-4 majority opinion. Justice Blackmun.
I've always thought, and I've told Byron this with a smile on my face, it's one of the worst opinions he ever wrote.
Blackmun's angry dissent, predicting the decision would eventually be reversed, became reality last year when the Supreme Court, by a 6-3 vote, declared it had been wrong in 1986. The Powell switch has been written about before, but other switches have not, particularly those in the last 3 years of Blackmun's tenure, because no other justice's papers are publicly available for that period. In those 3 years, Blackmun's records indicate that the outcome of cases changed 11 times because one or more justices changed their minds. The files show that far from having their judicial feet stuck in cement, many justices examine and re-examine a legal question from many points of view in an attempt to reach the right conclusion. Former Blackmun clerk Bill McDaniel.
These are not nine all-wise people who retire to a secret room and come up with the answer that nobody else can figure out. They're nine human beings who are trying to wrestle with the problem the same way the rest of us do.
For instance, in a 1992 case involving the sale of pornography, there were seven votes initially to uphold the conviction of a Nebraska farmer who had ordered kiddie porn after repeatedly being sent mailed solicitations in a sting operation. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor drafted a majority opinion, but Justice White's dissent soon had more votes than O'Connor's. The farmer's conviction was thrown out on grounds that he had been entrapped into doing something he otherwise would not have done. Most of the cases in which votes switch are not the kinds of cases that matter to most Americans, a trademark case, a double jeopardy claim. But over the years, there have been some notable ones involving, in some cases, life or death, and in others, billions of dollars. In 1983, for instance, the court decided a case testing whether videotape machines violated the nation's copyright laws. At the time, videotape machines were in their infancy on the market, and Hollywood was challenging their legality, contending that the machines allowed consumers to illegally duplicate copyrighted TV shows and films. After the case was argued, Blackmun's records show the vote was 5-4 to rule against the manufacturers. Blackmun drafted a majority opinion that would likely have ground the industry to a halt. But after several attempts to accommodate his fifth vote, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, he finally wrote to O'Connor, "My letter of June 23rd represents the limit of what I'm willing to do. Five votes are not that important to me when I feel that proper legal principles are involved." In the end, O'Connor joined an opinion written by Justice John Paul Stevens, holding that Sony and other manufacturers of videotape recording machines were not liable for copyright infringement. The 1971 Muhammad Ali draft case was another that changed in the course of the court's deliberations.
Jones heavyweight champion Cassius Clay at a federal court in Houston is found guilty of violating the U.S. Selective Service laws by refusing to be inducted. He is sentenced to 5 years in prison and fined $10,000.
Cassius Clay, who had taken the Muslim name Muhammad Ali, had been refused conscientious objector status. He appealed all the way to the Supreme Court, where the justices initially voted to uphold his conviction. Justice John Harlan was assigned to write the opinion, but again, in the course of writing it, he decided his original conclusion was wrong. "I am now convinced that the conviction should be reversed," he wrote to his colleagues. In the end, the court issued an unsigned opinion, without dissent, holding the conviction invalid because of the Justice Department's handling of the case. A less famous, but perhaps even more poignant case, involved an Ohio homeowner named Inez Moore, who was sentenced to 5 days in jail for violating an East Cleveland city ordinance that barred her two grandsons from living with her in a single-family home. After the case was argued, the vote was 5-4 against the grandmother. Chief Justice Berger circulated an opinion that would have left to localities full discretion to decide what a nuclear family is. The line East Cleveland had drawn was rational, he said. That provoked a furious memo from Justice William Brennan. Quote, "The nuclear family concept seems to me completely out of touch with the reality of a vast number of relationships in our society, including my own as a youngster growing up." Berger's draft did not attract enough votes, so he then assigned the task of writing the opinion to Justice Potter Stewart. 3 months later, though, with Stewart's draft in play, Justice John Paul Stevens was having second thoughts. He and his law clerk undertook a review of a large number of state cases involving single-family zoning ordinances. And as Stevens put it in a memo to his colleagues, "There appears to be no precedent for this type of law. Until I reviewed some of the state cases, I had assumed that it was customary to define the word family in terms of the degree of close family connection. Since that is not true," he wrote, "I am now convinced there is no justification for excluding family members as the city of East Cleveland does here." With Stevens' switch, there were 5 votes to invalidate the ordinance, and Mrs. Moore prevailed. Today, while most people have not heard of Inez Moore, her case is often cited in Supreme Court decisions on everything from parental rights to privacy. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.